Hi, everybody, and welcome back. I'm Brian.
I'm Rui.
And Rui's going to present to us today a great and ever-exciting session on
monitoring.
So it's a review of our 336 monitoring, so this should be fairly quick. Bob, I'll hand it over to Rui.
All right, well, let's go through it. It's probably going to be a good refresher if you've already watched 336, but you haven't, then this is a good opportunity for you to catch up. So let's cover monitoring. So it's going to cover voice quality concepts. We're going to look through those. We're going to explore the link monitoring server components, what type of reports you get out of the box, and then we'll see look at the RTP and RTCP traffic that's going to be collected. So let's go right into it. So voice quality concepts. So what defines voice quality and what constitutes good voice quality versus bad quality? What are some common audio problems? And then we'll look at voice processing from the sender to the receiver, and there'll be two parts to that. So let's look at what defines good voice quality. So one is going to be call reliability. Calls get established as expected, and calls do not get dropped midway through the call. So that's what we would expect as a baseline for call reliability. You make a call and it goes through and it stays there until you hang up. So that's going to be an important aspect of reliability. And then the next part is going to be call quality. So we want to make sure that while you're on the call, it's meeting the user's needs in terms of the audio quality, the audio sound within the call, that you don't have to keep saying, "Are you there? Are you there? Can you hear me? Can you hear me?" It's rather annoying, and so we want to make sure that that is covered. So who matters? Well, from the perspective of Link, we care about the user quality of experience. So it's not about necessarily the quality of service, although that is an important aspect, but it is ultimately the experience of the user, and we refer to that as quality, QOE, or quality of experience. Can I make a phone call successfully? And then it's also about the administrative quality of life. Can I discover, can I diagnose, can I troubleshoot any quality issues that are being reported? That's going to be an important aspect of monitoring. So then what constitutes good voice quality? Well, as a starting point for most user expectations is the desktop PBX phone. Most of us have grown up or used a PBX phone, so we use that as a baseline for call quality. And that means, you know, high dial tone availability. Every time you pick that headset, you have a dial tone, and there's no downtime on that. And then the next aspect would be a narrow band audio, so you have good quality of the sound.
Yeah, but it's narrow band, and that's why when people use Link for the first time and hear wideband audio, it's like, wow, this sounds so nice. And then when you go to a PSTN call via a trunk, you're like, oh, we're back to normal call quality. But there is a significant difference between narrow and wideband. But narrow is all that people are expecting, at least initially, until they get spoiled by Link communications.
That's right. It does, with wideband, it does sound like you're in the room itself when you have no issues with the call quality. So that's a nice user experience, and they sometimes think that either when it gets silent, the call drops because it's just so quiet, or that they just are pretty surprised by the quality. So good voice quality is highly subjective. So that's one aspect there. I mean, what I may consider to be good may not be considered to be a good call quality from Brian's perspective. And it's obviously context sensitive. So up to that point, users have been able to accept lower voice qualities depending on the situation and the other advantages. Like, for example, if you're using a cell phone, you're willing to trade off quality because you have the mobility and you have that ability to have your phone with you everywhere you go, regardless of whether you're at the office or on the road. Users may be willing to trade off a bit of quality if they're using voice over IP because they're trading price. So they're able to call overseas, international calls for very cheap or almost free, depending on what service provider you use. And so they're willing to experience a bit of pain with the voice quality at that. Anyways, the bottom line is that users will notice voice quality issues, but they're willing to trade it off based off of other parameters that they're willing to live with. So that's what would be defined as success. So if they're able to make the call and they have other considerations that are more important to them, they'll want to look at that. So what are some common audio problems that can factor into? Well, this table here, this chart, gives you a bunch of different factors. You have payload factors. So for example, like volume level, can you hear the person? Noise, that would be like the background noise level. There's the double talk. So it's kind of similar to echo, where you hear the same person. It appears that they're talking there in the echo chamber. You have the echo itself, you have the delay, and you have fidelity. And then there's other factors, like network factors. That would be jitter, packet loss, network delays, bandwidth issues that you can have. And those two definitely affect the endpoint behavior. So packet loss, there are some ways for the device to be able to conceal or improve the call quality. For example, if you have packet loss, you can do packet loss concealment. For jitter, you can do adaptive jitter buffering. For AGC, that's automatic gain control. You can do those. You can change to a different codec. So if the call quality or the bandwidth is low, then you can switch dynamically to a different codec that can adapt to a lower bandwidth network constraint. There is noise suppression, so you can remove a lot of the distractions from the audio itself. There is AEC, and I put the acronyms here on the right side, so acoustic echo cancellation. So when you have echoes, you can remove those so that it improves the call quality. And then, of course, there's the devices themselves. So like we mentioned, does your device have a good microphone? So it picks up the call at the analog level and has a good fidelity to it. And then there's also forward error correction. So forward error corrections helps you with bad network bandwidth issues and networking issues where packets get dropped. So FEC will help improve those aspects. And then, of course, there's external factors that need to be taken into consideration. What is the content? What are you sending? What are the expectations? What's the experience and the environment in which you're at? Are you on Wi-Fi or do you have a gigabit Ethernet connection? Those will impact your call quality. And that is what we consider to total the sum of what the user experience will be or the perceived experience that they'll have, and therefore the perceived voice quality. So there is a number of factors that come into account in terms of how the call quality is perceived. So you can see there is a lot of considerations to take into account there. So let's look at the voice processing from the sender to the receiver. So in here, let's look at on the far left, there's a capture of the audio device. So that's your microphone on the device itself. Then there's the process that goes to the analog automatic gain control. And then there's also the echo cancellation aspects, noise suppression, voice activity detection, whether you're actually saying anything or is it silent. And so Link can actually just suppress the call and all the traffic while there's no voice activity going on. And then there's a digital automatic gain control that can happen there, silence suppression. And then finally, the codec encoder. So once you've gone through and captured the analog audio, it can go through a number of processes to clean up the audio before it gets encoded. Because, like Brian was saying, garbage in, garbage out. We want to be able to clean up as much of the garbage before it is actually transmitted over the network, because you want to streamline those packets as much as possible. So that's an important aspect there to consider. So once it's transmitted over to the network, then it reaches its endpoint. And on the endpoint, there is going to be a codec decoder. So you're going to decode the signal. And then here, we're going to do some what's considered to be audio healing. So you're going to have adaptive jitter buffers, packet loss concealment, and comfort noise generator. So comfort noise generator is basically means if it's just quiet, people have gotten accustomed to hear some kind of static or background noise. And so if it's super quiet because there's really no audio communication going through, then on the receiving end, you can just kind of introduce a little bit of background noise. So it feels to the user that they're still on the call, as opposed to, oh, did the call just drop? And then they'll actually end up dropping the call and then trying to restart the call and say, I lost you there, when in actuality, it wasn't the case. Packet loss concealment is if the network drops the packets and the receiving endpoint didn't receive it, then they're going to be able to conceal the signal so that actually it just they normalize it, if you will, the call so that it doesn't sound like there is these drops in the signal of the audio. And then the adaptive jitter buffer is to be able to repackage the order of the packets in the correct order when it's received. And then after that, after the audio healing process is performed, there's going to be the acoustic echo cancellation portion of it. And then finally, the audio is rendered on the device. So you can see there is a lot of processing that occurs both on the sending end as well as the receiving end to render a high fidelity audio quality signal. So now that we've talked about how the audio is transmitted, how it's captured, and how it's sent, let's explore how the link monitoring server components are involved so that you can actually monitor these calls. So we'll look at the components that are involved, then we'll look at enabling the monitoring service, and then looking at using the monitoring management pack for SCOM, that can help you there, the Link Server 2013 SCOM that's available, and then we'll look at some of the monitoring scenarios as well. So monitoring requires the monitoring server role. That is a role that has been deprecated. Instead, now that monitoring service is now co-located on your front-end server. So in 2010, that used to be a separate standalone server role. In 2013, that's no longer the case. It's just automatically co-located on your front-end servers. It's a further reduction of the number of server roles that are required for Link, and therefore the number of servers that you have to manage, which is nice. It's a nice consolidation of server roles there. It does require a back-end database to store all the data that's collected. And that's using SQL Server databases, and here are the versions that are supported. So notice over here that it's all 64-bit versions of SQL Server, of 2008 R2 to 2012, both Enterprise and Standard Edition. And then in order to view or create those reports, it does use SQL Server reporting services if you want to be able to view those reports. Now, again, since it's all stored in the database, you can have your own reporting services if you want. You could just, you know, just go directly to the database and pick out the fields that are of interest and generate your own reports. That is certainly an option there for you, because it is just a standard database. Now, that does require also having data collection agents that runs on every front end server. So the data is collected by the agents on the front end servers. And then they capture the data that's required for all the different modalities. And then that raw data is then sent and persisted on the local LYSS queue.
And the list queue. And the question came, is MSMQ gone then? And yes, unless you're talking about, it could still be around for persistent chat and for its compliance stuff. But for normal monitoring and QoE, yes. We no longer rely on the MSMQ.
Good. Yeah, and the list is the link storage service there. That is used. So the data is processed then, and then by the appropriate data adapters for migration, all those things. And then the reporting aspect is optional. So once you have the data stored, you can go ahead and mine that data however you want that meets your needs. So what is involved in enabling the monitoring server? So you have unified data collection agents that are automatically installed. So those are installed and activated on all the front-end servers, so you don't have to do anything particular for that. You do not need to configure a server to act as a monitoring server. Like we said, it is incorporated as part of the front-end server, so there is no separate server role there. And then each front-end server already functions as a monitoring server, so that's already done there. And you just need to install and configure a database to act as the back-end data store for monitoring.
So not only did we get rid of the role, we actually made it highly available by putting it in all the front-end servers.
Exactly, and it's there's no installation to be done, and configuration is just, you just have to hook it up to a back-end SQL database.
Yeah, and if you watch the 336, we actually walked through in a demo how simple it really is, and it really is a couple of clicks. You hit publish, and now it's enabled. You've got to configure it within the control panel or management shell to actually turn it on, but the back-end configuration is brandless. It's really simple to do.
Right. All right, so let's look at the management pack for SCOM. So it's a comprehensive end-to-end monitoring management pack for the System Center Operations Manager, that's SCOM. And it's supported on SCOM 2007, R2, and 2012. It provides an extensive component of event and performance monitoring, so you have full support for synthetic transactions against Link Server 2013 deployments, It uses the monitoring server CDRs, that's the call detail records, and the QoE, quality of experience data, to generate alerts showing deployment health. So this allows you to, as it collects the information to using the management pack, to alert you as the administrator, you know, through different triggers of events that may be affecting the health or the quality of voice in your environment. So in Link Server 2013 SCOM, let's look at what's new. So there are some new scenarios of availability from any, there's, you know, availability scenarios from any location. You have synthetic transaction logs. There's an increased call reliability coverage, dependency on monitoring, and then enhanced monitoring reports that you can have as well. So monitoring scenarios. So it supports synthetic transactions. It has you can do call reliability alerts. You can set those up. You can have media quality alerts, component health alerts, and dependency on health monitoring. So you can set all those up there. And then let's explore some of the reports. So out of the box with the SQL reporting services, you can have peer-to-peer activity summaries. And we'll look at some of the diagrams of, or reports that are generated. You can have a user registration report, call diagnostics summary report, the media quality summary, and monitoring database performance, configuring monitoring server settings, and then you have the collecting monitoring data. So let's look at peer-to-peer activity reports. So you can see here, this is a report that's generated. And there's some interesting aspects here. So you can see it's based off of dates. So you have the dates on the far left. And then you can see the total number of peer-to-peer sessions. So these are peer-to-peer sessions. And on January 14th, there were 26. Out of 26, there were a total of 25 audio sessions, peer-to-peer sessions. And the total number of peer-to-peer audio session minutes was 25 minutes. On average, the sessions lasted about 0.96 minutes, it looks like. And there was one video session here, and a total of peer-to-peer video session minutes of 5 minutes. So that one session took 5 minutes. So you can see that there. So that is an example of what you can look at, and you can collect those data and see the pattern of usage in your environment of audio and video. So the user registration report is interesting. It can tell you the number of logins. So again, it's based off of dates, so you can see the total number of logins. So on the 14th, there were a total of three logins. Three of those logins were internal, so all the users that logged in were all internal, and they were three unique logins. Now on the, let's take a look at another one here. Let's look at the 16th. So there were a total of 11 logins. 11 of them were internal logins, and only three of them were unique. So these three users had multiple endpoints. Maybe they were connected to your desktop, and they were also connected to their phone, their phone edition. They could have been also connected to their Link mobile device. And so that would explain the number of the larger number of endpoints than there are of unique users. So that's another example of how those reports can give you some detail. It's kind of interesting to look at those. So the call diagnostic summary report gives you an idea of the sessions based off of modality. So you can see here on this pie chart that the large majority of the sessions were all audio calls. You have two sessions that were instant messaging, and then one session that was the video. So that's consistent with the reports that we saw, the previous two reports. So there was a total of 54 sessions, and there was a failure rate of 7.41%, so you can look at that. And all those failure rates occurred in the audio calls, not in the instant messaging aspects. So it helps you drill down as to, you know, where the failures were occurring, and you can look at those. The media quality summary report provides you information about the type of calls. So is it the UC peer-to-peer call? There were 30 of those. Was it a PSTN call? It's from the UC leg, so there was one of them. And then a PSTN call on the gateway leg, and that again was one. So you can see that information. And you can see that the poor call percentage was 23% here, and it all happened on the peer-to-peer call. So nothing to do with going out to the PSTN or incoming. And so that gives you a good idea what that information is. All right, let's take a look at monitoring database performance. So an important consideration is the placement of the data in the log files. And so, Brian, what do you usually like to do when you install the monitoring database? Do you put it co-located with the same database as you do for your SQL Server on your pools, or
separate? Depends on the size of the deployment. If it's a smaller to mid-sized company and they have a properly sized SQL Server, sure, we'll put it all on there. The data will be co-located. It's recommended by Microsoft to have separate spindles, separate SQL services, separate instances, minimally, but not required. It can all live all in one SQL instance if that's appropriate to your organization.
It all depends on the performance that you're going after. So you want to take that into consideration. And then use the Link Server Deployment Wizard. That will help you in your configuration and testing for good performance. So that's something you want to take into consideration. And of course, always follow your best practices for SQL design. Look at those, and that will help you. Here's, again, a link at the bottom that's for your reference to give you some more information, so you can look at that for more details. So let's look at the monitoring server settings. So the Link Server control panel monitoring and archiving section there will offer the call detail reporting tab, allows you to enable or disable call detail reporting. So you can look at the CDRs there, and then you can configure the settings for purging that data, because obviously that's going to keep growing and growing and growing. So you want to make sure that you have some way of either pulling that data out, or you just simply purge it. So you want to make sure you configure that setting. And then the QoE data tab, you're going to have some settings there for how to purge the information as well. And then the server application tab will allow you to enable or disable the QoE setting. And then from the management PowerShell, these following three verbs here are you can use for configuring your CDR and server application settings as well as the QoE. So you'll want to leverage those PowerShell commands for doing that. So in terms of collecting monitoring data, if monitoring has been enabled for a pool, you can disable or enable call detail records. You can enable or disable the quality of experience. And here's for your reference the command PowerShell command for doing both of these. This one here is for enabling CDR, and that one over here is for enabling QoE. And of course, in this example, it's being disabled. So that's there for your reference. So if you need a handy reference, you can have that there. And then the report types. So you have the media quality summary reports, the user activity. It seems like this is a duplicate from what we just talked about. So we talked about the different reports, and this looks like there was just a duplicate there. And the RTP and RTCP collected information. So what data does the media quality summary report collects? And then the number of poor call percentages and details that are reported from the media quality summary report. So we can look at that. So some information to keep an eye out that you want to look for in your reports. So these settings, like the jitter inner arrival, you want to look at that, the round trip, the packet loss rate, which, you know, packets are being lost. So that's usually an indication that there's a problem with your network. Or the network in which the call is coming from. So maybe there's a router issue, something like that. And then there's the overall average network MOS. That's the average wideband network MOS for the call. And that's a metric between 1 and 5. That depends. That's kind of a collective measure of packet loss, jitter, and codecs use on there. And then the jitter is basically average network jitter from the RTCP statistics. And jitter is basically the variation in time between packets' arrival. So if in an ideal world, all the packets would come in at the same in the same order. So if you send packet 1, then packet 2, then packet 3, they would arrive in the same order, packet 1, packet 2, packet 3. But in a network, that is not always the case. You may have packet 2 arriving before packet 1, and so you need to be able to reassemble those packets in the correct order. And if packet 1 comes substantially later than packet 2, which had already arrived, then you can't really reassemble. You can't wait for packet 1 in order to reassemble packet 2 and 3. You just have to keep moving on. And so you just drop once it arrives, or if it never arrives, you just have to continue on. And so you've lost that packet one there. So those aspects. And then the round trip basically is the round trip time from the RTCP statistics. For acceptable quality, this should be less than 100 milliseconds. So keep that number in mind when you're examining these statistics. So in terms of the media quality summary report, what we look for in poor call percentages. So here, for example, in this report, you can see that it's already highlighted in red. You can see that this call between MR and Brad in the same organization, the round trip time took 502 milliseconds. So it's way beyond the 100 milliseconds recommendation. And even the ones in yellow here, they're also beyond that. It's 273 and 346. So they're beyond that. And so this gives you a good idea of which calls had poor quality or had issues. So from there, you can start troubleshooting and collecting logs as well. So and here's more detail about the percentage of calls. So you can see here that this is from the caller to the callee, and then on this one here is the callee to the caller. And so you can see that the average packet loss was 20%. That's quite high for transmission there, and the round trip time was 273 milliseconds. So it is quite high. And then on the return part, there was also 23% packet loss. So it's usually an indication, these two, that there is something going on with the network, maybe a routing issue or router issue or a networking issue that's happening, or just the network being overloaded. So it's something to give you an indication there for what could have happened. And everything else seems to be okay. All right, so and then here's a little bit more help for you to help debug. So one of the things you're going to look, sometimes you may have a call quality issue that is only specific to a subset of users or one user. And so one of the things to do is to ask the user or to enable client logging. And here's a screenshot of how you can do that. You can tell them the level of logging you want to enable. And then just pull the log file from the user once they've replicated the issue. You know, they just ask them to read the call. You capture the information. And once you've captured the information, here's the path where the log file would be generated. You can use the Link Server 2013 debugging tools, and in particular the Snooper tool, to go and investigate further the reason for the call drops. And this is a nice tool for visualizing the log files as opposed to using Notepad. And with that, that's it on monitoring.
That's
so
awesome.
We are done on this, and then we'll be back for another after a break.
Yeah, we'll take a short break, and we'll be right back with another presentation by Rui on resiliency,
voice resiliency.
And we'll be back with that right after this.